Welcome to the Brad and Body Podcast. You already know who we are. We wouldn't be here, so let's not waste any more time. Here's Bradley.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Brad and Body Podcast, where we have the WNBL flavor today with the Grand Final Series and, of course, some NBL great games. Body, what a week.
Yeah, it's been amazing. After that first game, when game one of the Grand Final, when Perth absolutely flogged Melbourne in Melbourne, honestly, I thought that was over. I thought they were going to be done and dusted psychologically.
Yep.
So to get up by a point in game two in Perth was sets up an amazing finish. It's a winner-take-all now on Saturday. So, listen, why don't you get to our guest, and I'm just going to go make a cup of coffee because this is going to be the longest intro of all time. Go.
So let me just tell you, Body, I spoke to Body before I did this, and I was like, Body, I could actually take the show up with this. This lady is phenomenal, and I'm only touching on the surface with what I'm saying today. I've cut out so much, but let me go there. Born in Ventura in California, she played college basketball for the Washington Huskies. She then launched her pro career in Germany playing for the Chemcats, I hope I'm saying that correctly, and the Wolfenbüttel Wildcats. Wolfenbüttel, I think it is, Body.
Okay.
She then played in Slovakia and played in Turkey as well, but she first came to Australia in 2013 for the Rockingham Flames in the SBL and ended up playing there for four seasons. At this time, a two-time SBL champion, a three-time SBL MVP, two-time Grand Final MVP, four-time All-Star. Unbelievable. She then went to Perth in 2015 and signed with the Lynx, and wow, this career. I would not have enough time, but I'm going to just tell you a couple of things. In the 16-17 season, she tallied 652 points through 27 games, and she was the greatest scoring season in 36 season of the WNBL. Oh, the greatest. Yeah. Unbelievable. Can I also say she knocked down an 105 three-pointers in that time as well. Player of the month honors umpteen times. She had 40 point games averaged over 20 for that season. A three-time All-Star. She is unbelievable. Made her WNBA debut in 2017, winning a championship with the Seattle Storm in 18 and 20. In 21, she was acquired by the New York Liberty. In that season, she scored a career-high 30 points over Atlanta. Then she became an Aussie, Body, in 2018, and she made that debut for the mighty Australian Opals in the FIBA World Cup, winning a FIBA medal. She's captained the Opals. She is currently playing in this fantastic Grand Final series. Like you said, Body, they won the first game amazingly, lost the second game, and we cannot wait for this third game. We now have this tomorrow night in Melbourne, and I am, of course, welcoming Sammy Whitcomb. What a fantastic achievement, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Ooh, take a breath. That was impressive.
3 minutes. I timed it.
I touched the edges. I'm telling you, I only touched the edges.
Do you ever pinch yourself, Sammy? Sammy, do you ever pinch yourself? Do you have to pinch yourself and go, look at this. How did this all happen? Because it's all over the place. Europe, and it's an amazing career. How do you? I don't even know how you approach it.
Yeah, look, I'm very lucky. I have had some incredible opportunities, and I'm so fortunate that this game has given me all it's given me. But yeah, I mean, it's been an absolute, like, the craziest ride that you could even, I mean, I didn't even have, you know, some of these dreams. I didn't know to dream big enough with some of these things. You just, you play the game because you love it, and you chase these, you know, these goals and these opportunities, and you hope that it leads to something, you know, remarkable. And I've been so lucky that every time an opportunity, a door has closed somewhere, something else has opened. I've chased that one down, and it's really led to just some amazing things.
Amazing. Sammy, I want to take you back at this time of the pod. We always say, how did it start? Obviously, you know, you're in, you know, New York, you're obviously in California. Where did it all start? Was it a family thing? Was it a different sport? How'd you go?
Yeah, I started with soccer, actually. I really love soccer. And I was pretty good at that young. And I just kind of did too much too soon. I think I was doing club and AAU and all stars, and it was year round for 3 years. I just didn't stop, and I got quite burnt out, and I just wanted to try something different. So I stopped playing soccer, and I wasn't really sure. I didn't love basketball at that stage. I didn't really like it, actually. And I went to this like basic kind of community tryouts, for my brother. He was trying out for that. And my mom kept asking, are you sure you don't want to do this? Are you sure you don't want to do this? And I was like, I don't want to do this. And literally we're getting ready to leave. And I was like, crap, if I don't do this, like, I'm not going to be playing sport. There was like nothing else for me to basically sign up for. So I just remember as we're leaving, my mom looked at me because she knew better. And she was like, you want to do this, don't you? And I was like, yep. And so we had to get back in the line all over again. And she let me sign up for it. And it was just, I can't explain it, but I fell in love with it absolutely instantly.
Amazing.
Just, it was so different to soccer in terms of the how the team worked together, the physicality of it, but still kind of the individual part of it as well. It was just, it kind of combined all of it. And I just loved it.
I can imagine as a parent of three kids, why you would push into basketball. Outdoor soccer, raining, freezing. No, let's go to basketball. Yeah, it's really cool inside.
Yeah.
Not ideal. Yeah, so I loved it. And it was something that I think it grew instantly straight away. I was not good straight away, but I've always been that person that's never really bothered me. If I love something, I'm convinced that, you know, if I work hard enough at it, I can get good at it. And you know, when you're young, you're naive and you don't really know to not dream, to not think that I can do this. Why can't I do this? You know, of course I can. I love it. Everyone else is doing it. You know, I just got to get in the gym and do it. And you have fun. And that's the biggest thing at that age. You just want to have fun. So you're having fun. And I was. That was all that mattered, really.
So your brother was involved. Do you have any other siblings or is it just you and him?
No, just my brother. But honestly, we weren't particularly close. It was the thing that really drew me to basketball was my parents were divorced and I didn't get to see my dad that much. But he loved sports. He played high school basketball. He loved it. And I think I thought, well, this would be a really great way to get close with him, to bond with him. And that was really for a long time. A really driving motivational kind of factor for me. It was definitely to kind of get close with my dad.
Okay, so you've then progressed on. You've gone to college. You've had a very successful college career. You didn't get drafted, right?
Right, correct.
And so at that point, you're thinking, well, that's it. My career's over. I mean, imagine if you hadn't followed through that thought, Sammy. Jeez.
Yeah, it's crazy because at that time, though, you know, overseas wasn't really, I mean, it was, but it didn't have the exposure. Like now I feel like everyone knows that you can go overseas. You can play so many different levels. There's so many opportunities in so many countries. And back then it didn't feel that way. So when I didn't get drafted, which wasn't a surprise, I knew I wasn't getting drafted, but it was more than I had a training camp contract with Chicago and I was cut. And quite honestly, I'm a very realistic person. I knew I was going to get cut. I was not good enough. I was not ready physically, mentally, any of it. So it was a really fantastic just barometer for me to really test, okay, like what's the area that I need to, and it turns out it was every area, honestly, quite honestly, it was every area I needed to improve in. And I was okay with that. That didn't scare me, but it was, I needed an opportunity. I needed a forum to do that in. And I couldn't do that just going to the gym with myself or with a trainer. Mm. I needed to compete against stronger, faster players. I needed to compete against other professionals. And then, so I signed with an agent and then she couldn't find anything for me. So that was the real point of like, oh, like I might be done. It wasn't, I got cut from WNBA. It was like, I can't get an overseas gig here. Like, what am I going to do? Wow. So that was really scary. I didn't get a job. So I went and coached on my basketball staff at college. I was the video coordinator on that staff. I signed up for as many leagues as I could. I played in like two men's leagues with some of my friends. We actually won one of them. That was so fun. But those guys hated that. They lost to someone that had a woman on that team. I played in a couple female leagues. All the sports coaches at UW, like Coach Romar and some of those dudes, would play noon hoops every day, which was actually like some of the most competitive basketball you'd see. It was so funny. So I played in that. I just, anytime I could play, I played. And then when the season ended, I got a different agent and I just committed. I said, I'm doing this. I can get one gig over. I just need one team to say yes. I don't care what level it is. I don't care if I don't get paid. I'm doing this because I felt like I just needed that opportunity and I just knew that would turn into something. And it did. Luckily enough, I got a gig. Adorably said Chemnitz, but it's Chemnitz. But that's okay. You're very close.
I so tried. I even very Googled close. It. Did I say it right?
Very close. I understand why the urge to say Chem. But yeah, so I went and played there. Yeah, I get it. I went there, played a season there. You know, our coach got fired 5 games in. We didn't do that well, but it was an opportunity to compete. So that was really important for me because that's what the overseas you know, teams are looking at. Once you had one season in the books, you could just point to that. I didn't now need to say, oh, I did this in college and I had a training camp contract. It was just, what have you done previously overseas? Right. And I could point now to a season.
Yes.
So that was like critical. So, I mean, you say that, Buddy, like, it is crazy to think that if I hadn't, you know, just pushed that next season and done that, I mean, a whole life of experiences and everything just doesn't happen. So it's, it's wild to think about, really.
Sammy, I'm sitting here and I've got, sorry, Buddy, I'm just, I've got goosebumps because I'm listening to this and what a role model. Here's a girl that is an absolute superstar that literally just could have walked away from the game, but you kept fighting. And that's that is a story in itself. So tell me now, so you've gone to Germany, you've played overseas. Do you have the same agent that then got you to Australia?
No. So I, the agent that I had for those first few years, I love them. They were amazing. They're like family. I've recommended so many people to them that were very similar to me coming out in that they just have a really good niche for like, you're coming out, you don't have a big name, but you're good enough. You just need that opportunity. They're really well connected in some of those leagues. So I constantly am sending people to them because they're just so fantastic for that. And everybody needs that. Not everybody needs, you know, a massive agency that's going to sign you to just a top team. There are other people as well. So I think that's really important. So I'm not with them anymore, but I really do love them. The agent that, they did get me the SBL contract. And then after that, it was kind of, I just didn't even have a need, not need for them, but I was very much just based in Australia trying to play WNBL. So I almost didn't use them at that stage. I was like, look, I'm going to play SBL. I'll play well. Hopefully I'll be here. Surely someone will find me. And it just didn't happen that way.
Amazing.
It was so frustrating and hard for me to accept. But yeah, so once that worked out, I signed with a new agency at that stage. But yeah, they were so good. And it was just another really fortuitous thing that happened. I was playing for that Wolfenbüttel team. And we went bankrupt right before playoffs. We finished top of the league, team went bankrupt. So we weren't allowed to play. We all said, oh, we'll play. We don't care if we get paid, but you had to pay league fees to do it. And we're like, well, look, we can't afford the league fees. So we're done. And I had inquired previously about playing in Australia in the off season, but usually it sort of overlapped a bit with playing in Europe. So it was never an opportunity. And then all of a sudden Rockingham Flames, their import drops out right at the same time. Her name is Emma Cannon. She's a stud. She drops out. I become available and Ryan Petrick, who's my coach now, he was the Rockingham Flames coach. He messaged Emma and said, hey, do you recommend anyone from your league? Like, and I think he saw that I was the league top scorer. So he said, what about her? Luckily enough, she gave me a good review. So he went and asked my agent. I was traveling in Austria at the time. As you do when your team goes bankrupt and you're stuck in Europe, you just travel. So I was traveling. I got the email and I just remember I was in shoddy service. I'm in the middle of Austria somewhere. And I get this email saying, do you want to play in Australia? There's a team. And I literally just said, book the flight, make it happen. I will get on that plane. I'll figure out a way to get back, but make it happen kind of thing. Wow. That was it. So then it was like, catch a train back to Germany, get on this plane the next day, wake up in Australia. And again, like, fork in the road, like I don't do that. My life is so different because Australia has absolutely changed the landscape of my life and career.
Well, that's the thing. You see, you can't see Brad or myself because we can see each other on the screen and we're just shaking our heads. We're just shaking our heads with everything you're saying. That how easily none of this could have happened.
Yeah.
And then I still remember when Perth Lynx announced that you were going to be playing for them in the WNBL, and then those of us over here in the middle of the country or over on the East Coast, we hadn't heard of you, and it's like, oh, this girl's been dominating for Rockingham in the WA State League for several years. I'm thinking, what is the matter with these people? You were right under their noses for that. That must have been frustrating as hell.
I know, and it's one of those things that I just with probably most of my career in my life that it doesn't bother me as much because, I mean, one, I genuinely believe that things do happen for a reason and timing is so critical to so many things. And for me, looking at it now, like it's easy for me to be like, you know, resentful of it or, you know, I've had that's 3 years of missed opportunities I could have been playing, you know, in WNBL or whatever. Yep. But when the time came for the Wildcats to buy the Lynx and to rebrand and to start over. Jack Bendat and that organization, those owners in that group, bless him, wanted to kind of start fresh. They wanted to start over. They wanted to bring in new names. So that was coaching staff, that was players alike. So they were very particular, and I think they really only brought back one player who had kind of previously been a part of it. And it didn't matter if you were like a good player for them. They wanted to start fresh. They wanted to bring in new blood. And I honestly think that if I had played for West Coast Waves previously when they were that, leading into that, I don't know that they would have given me an opportunity when that rebrand came. And I think that was critical. I think coming in, honestly, and doing it the way that I did it with that new group, even with Andy and his kind of style of play, and him sort of saying, like, here you go, like, you know, get you do what you want to do in terms of, like, the offense, gave me a lot of freedom in that. I really think that was all sort of part of how it had to happen in order for me to sort of come out and, I think, do well. Because I'm also going to say, I think, you know, yeah, it's SBL and maybe it's not as competitive, but I had 3 years of, like, getting better, improving, working on things, motivating, like, feeling like, you know, oh, these people don't think I'm good enough for this league. Like, I'm going to show them whenever the time comes, like, I'm going to be ready. I was so hungry that year that I think, it all just needed to happen that way, I really think.
Well, for the benefit of the young girls listening, that is the career pathway. You start in the WA State League. You move on to WNBL, you play for a championship, maybe don't get it that time around, but then you get to the WNBA, you win a championship, you win a couple of championships in the WNBA, you come back to Australia, you get citizenship, and you become the Opals captain. So that's the actual pathway. We've just laid
that's
it out.
That's the blueprint. Yeah. That's the blueprint. Yeah, I'll be starting a program for that, no worries.
I want to watch it. I'm going to come back to the Perth team because we're then going to talk about, obviously, playoffs and everything, but let's talk about the time you became naturalized and then played for the Opals. What was that like?
Oh, I mean, that was incredible. It was bizarre how that happened as well, as is most of, you know, the things that happened in my life. I was playing in the WNBA. I mean, obviously getting the citizenship and all that, that was beautiful in itself, like for so many reasons in my life. I loved Australia. Australia was my home. My wife is Australian. I very much felt Australian in a way that, you know, the U.S. just has never, I've always just felt like, you know, I knew I was going to leave the States and just be a, kind of a wanderer and a traveler and stuff like that. So to get citizenship in a place that really felt like home was amazing. But then to have that lead to something really incredible in terms of my career in basketball was just also really special. So I was playing in the semifinals in the WNBA. We won game 5. It was absolutely epic. And it was like the next day, because we just played the Phoenix team that Sandy was coaching at the time. And so they were now out. She was obviously thinking about Worlds. And she called me, and I thought she was calling just to say, you know, congrats, like, good luck, all the best. And she was doing that, but she followed up by saying, you know, are you interested in coming to Worlds after you win a championship for the WNBA? And I was like, I mean, yeah, like, that sounds great.
Why not, eh? Like, why not?
I thought you'd never ask, you know? And yeah, just it turned out, as, you know, as cruel as sports can be, you know, unfortunately, Leilani was injured. She was dealing with this injury she couldn't play through, which is, you know, it's just part of the game, unfortunately. And it was not the way that I wanted to make the team, but it's one of those things. You grab opportunities when they come up. And so I was literally, we won the championship game 3, flew back to Seattle, packed, and was on a plane the next day to Tenerife to meet the girls over there. They had been there for, you know, I think like a week at that stage or whatever. So I was kind of, you know, jumping in a little bit late, but they were amazing, just welcoming me in and getting me settled and feeling comfortable. And then, yeah, it was straight into that. And that was one of the, I mean, it was unforgettable in so many ways, you know, playing Spain in that semi in, like, in front of the Spanish fans, who were just absolutely giving it to us, to win that game, to then, you know, in a sort of really ironic and funny fashion, play US, you know, in the final, the first time I'm playing for a national team, and it's against, you know, the country that I've actually born to.
Brilliant.
But now playing for Australia, just all very funny. But that was incredible as well. So amazing to get that opportunity. And in my first time, you know, in like a real, in a big campaign, like, that was just wild. It was crazy. It was very overwhelming. And, you know, it was, I think after that, I came down from, you know, WNBA championship, winning silver. Like, I was emotionally wrecked after that, quite honestly. Like, that was really hard because I didn't really get to take in either the way that I wanted to. So that was really difficult to then, you know, come back after that. I had to take a bit of time because, like you said, you pinch yourself. Like, these are things you dream of for so long, and then bam, they're just thrown at you back to back so quickly, and you're like, holy cow.
So what did that mean?
That was a crazy time.
I was going to say, if you took your story to a publisher, they'd go,
oh, I've already got the title. I've got a working title, body. Don't steal this from me, but one of my teammates in Ana Dabovic, she plays for the Serbian national team. We played in Montpellier together, and she's exactly like you in terms of, like, she was just sat there, and she was like, no, I can't believe this. No. And then she was okay, I've got a title for you. Cause I told her how I worked when I went to Rockingham. I worked at a fish and chip shop to supplement, you know, playing basketball for the state league. And she just died. She thought that was the funniest thing in the world. So she goes, oh my gosh, fish and chips to Olympics. That's your title. She thought it was so funny. And I was like, oh, I love it. So I've just, every year we talk, and every year she's like, you just have to go to Olympics, and then you have your then you have your book, you have your story. I'm like, I'm still trying.
Sammy,
still trying to make that one work.
I'm just letting you know, I see Botti writing very quickly here, so just be careful, please.
Don't steal that. That is my title. I'm definitely writing a book, even if it's just for myself.
I am the witness. I'll make sure he doesn't, Sammy. Don't worry.
Thank you.
The question I want to ask you, though, I mean, you touched on it just a moment ago. I mean, you're obviously from America. You played in Germany, Slovakia, France, Turkey, Australia, and you've become an Australian citizen. You're one of us. You're going to stay here. What is it about Australia that appealed to you in such a way that you would think, okay, this is where I want to spend the rest of my life? It's not like you haven't seen, I mean, you've seen Spain and other places as well, but like, you haven't seen the world. What was it about our culture that appealed to you so much?
Oh, I mean, it's so laid back, but it's also, you know, like, I felt like it was just something really connected with me. First of all, I love the country. It's beautiful. I love the beaches, Perth, WA in general. So amazing. But there was something about, I remember just how people interacted, like, and it sounds silly or mean, but like, you just picked on each other. Everybody made jokes and made cracks at each other. And it was just so real and authentic that you could just all have a laugh. But it was never in a mean way.
Yes.
In such a very friendly, like, you're my mate, I love you, so I'm gonna just, you know, I'm just gonna laugh at you. We're all gonna laugh together. And I don't know what it was. Yeah, we pulled a piss, and I just felt like, you know, it's not to say nobody does that in the States, but I felt like, you know, we take ourselves a little too seriously sometimes, perhaps, and I just really enjoyed that sort of authenticity and sincerity of, like, I love you, but, like, I'm not going to just, you know, suck up to you and just say all this stuff. Like, I'm also going to, you know, people were lovely to me and they were great and kind. But they also were like, you know, if I airballed a three, they were like, are you even a shooter? Like, you just airballed a three, you know? Like, they're also really happy to just remind you, you know, like, your poop smells too, you know? And I just love that about it.
Well, that actually, just a quick segue, that was one of the issues that Luke Longley had with Michael Jordan, is that Luke is one of us and likes to pull the mickey, and Michael didn't appreciate that because he had to be, you know, he's the king of basketball.
Yeah.
You treat him with a certain reverence. And then I'm not sure what it was that Luke said to him, but it just tickled him. Jordan got it. You know, suddenly he got it, and he realized, oh, this is not really being irreverent towards me or being nasty. It's a bit of fun. And then he actually sort of came around and was doing the same sort of stuff. So, yeah, I get that. That's certainly unique to us, though.
Yeah, I love that. Sammy, can I ask, you've played in a lot of venues around the world. Yeah. Is the WNBA, like, what's the hardest, as in, to play in, but also what was been the toughest about living in different places, because you've lived in so many?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really fortunate that my 4 years in Seattle, we played at, I think, the best. In terms of the fans, like, they just redone the arena, so I'm imagining it'll be, you know, stunning and absolutely, you know, phenomenal. But I loved Key Arena. Key Arena was great even before, you know, this big redo. And we, you know, we in those championship series that we played in, we sold out, you know, we'd get 13,000, 14,000, whatever it was. fans, and it was just, I mean, it was raucous there. It was incredible. The only other place that I'd say that I played in that just in terms of the fans going crazy and it being this incredible, you know, kind of just atmosphere was that I came in Tenerife against Spain. It was less to do probably with the venue and more just the band is playing and they're going crazy. And it's just, it was literally 2 hours of noise, a constant noise. It was absolutely ridiculous. You couldn't hear yourself think, but I would say, you know, I've some of my best and favorite memories are playing in front of those Storm fans for sure. They're just incredible in the WNBA. And yeah, to your point about playing and living overseas and all that, look, it definitely comes with its challenges in terms of, you know, you're going to these places and not all of them are, it's not, you know, I lived in Germany. I didn't live in Berlin. I didn't live in like the touristy part of Germany. I didn't always live in the touristy parts of these places. So English isn't always, you know, as sort of obviously used as you might think that it is. So you try.
Yep.
And in France, I did. I made sure everywhere I went, I made sure I knew how to say hello and thank you and, you know, how to order a coffee. And all of those things. And you get lucky that usually because you are living there and they know that, eventually they work that out. You make friends and people are really lovely to you and they're welcoming. They help you out along the way. But I mean, I think it's, you have to be comfortable with, you know, like trying new things and messing up a little bit in terms of that stuff. And that's my favorite part though of the playing overseas. And it's why, like, I know people are like, oh, but you played so long overseas before you got to, I loved it. I loved the culture stuff. I loved getting to go. And, you know, when I lived in Germany that first year, you know, you'd have a weekend off all of a sudden, because maybe you played Friday, you won. So your coach is like, oh, take the weekend off. So you're looking at, oh, I can get a 15-euro flight to London for the weekend. Let's go. And you go. Or you can get a $30 train ride down the road to this place. I drove from Germany to the Netherlands to Holland to go visit one of my old teammates. Like the things you do, like you just would never do them. You could never do them in any other sort of like environment unless you're just living over there. And so it's something that I'm just my whole life I will cherish living over there and cherish the experiences that I had and the opportunities I had because of it. And it's hard for sure. I've missed probably every wedding of my friends that I would have wanted to go to and birth and, you know, so many milestones, and it's really difficult. It really is. But I will say it's things that, like, it's not to compare it. It's not to say that, oh, well, my experiences were better, but, you know, it's things that I wouldn't have been able to do otherwise. So it's just one of those things you have to accept. It's kind of part of that lifestyle, unfortunately.
Amazing. Right.
Now, quickly, you said milestones. You got a potential milestone coming up with a WNBL championship. What happened? What happened in game two? Just can you summarize it in a sentence?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, for my money, they were hungrier. I think it's as simple as that. And it's hard to say that because I know we won it. It's not like we don't want to win a championship. I thought we proved that in game one. It's been our goal the whole season. But I think we must, we didn't have that same edge because because their backs were really against the wall and ours just weren't quite in the same way, unfortunately. And sometimes
100%.
That happens.
How many times do you see that in sport? You see it.
Yeah. And you do. And it sucks. And it's so like, you know, you say it going in, you warn yourself, you know, you say it over and over again, you know, and it's almost like you manifest it in that way. But I thought credit to them. I mean, gosh, they did a really great job of just coming back from what, like you said, I think mentally could have really been a deflating experience in game one, but credit to them. They believed in themselves. They made some adjustments and they got over the line by a point, which is all they needed to do. So game three, bring it on. I can't wait. Hopefully it gives the fans everything they want. And, you know, I think that's all it's about anyways. And so long as we're holding the trophy up at the end, I don't really care if it goes to the game. I just want that trophy.
Now, Sammy, we know you must have listened to all of our shows, but even if you haven't, what we do at the end of the interview is we just like to throw a few quick names at our guest, you respond with whatever the first word that pops in your mind or a sentence or an anecdote if you've got it. But
do we have editing capabilities?
No, we don't.
Great.
All right, I'm going to
mindful of that.
All right, you ready? You ready?
Yes,
you're
I'm prepared? Ready.
Here we go. Sue Bird.
Goat.
Oh, wow. Beautiful. All right, I'm going to get one for your one of your teammates, Alex Cibitone.
Oh, bestie.
Nice.
Okay, Darcy Garvin.
God.
God, that's a good one.
Yeah. I'm going to say legend. I love her.
Beautiful. Sandy Brondello.
Ooh.
That'll do.
Yeah. This is a good one. I'm going to say when I think of her, I think of opportunity.
Nice. Yep.
Breanna Stewart.
Oh, my hero.
Beautiful. Jenna O'Hay.
Inspiration.
Nice.
Brilliant. Those are very, very good answers. I liked God for Darcy Garvin.
Yeah. I mean, not far off. Don't tell her that.
You can't take that one because Body left that for me, but that's fine. Sammy, look, we could talk for hours, but you've got a pretty big game coming up tomorrow. Body and I are going to go and have to get neck surgery after shaking so much of what we've just listened to your season. That is just your career, I should say. What a superstar you are. And you know what comes across? Like, I just hearing you say, you know, you make friends wherever you are. You just are an ultimate. You just seem so beautiful. I've never met you face to face, but just listening to you now, how humble and beautiful you are to speak to, we can't thank you enough for coming on from here. And congratulations on what is an absolute amazing career, but it's not even close to being over. So thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, guys. It was really nice to come on finally. Honestly, I do listen to you guys' show, and I've been just like, just waiting for this invite. Like, what the girl has to do? That's it.
Now, can I just add, I believe you are a parent now. Is that correct?
I am.
Well, a huge congratulations. 2 years old, am I right?
He's 17 months, but he thinks he's two. So, yeah, that's
right. Okay. All right. Well, I did see that. And that's absolutely congratulations to you and your partner. That's
thank
lovely.
Thank you so much. Yeah, thank you. And, yeah, hopefully I can come back on one day and we'll – reminisce about this, and I will be a WNBL champion then.
Yeah, yep.
With the book, you can launch the book from the fish and chips to the Olympics.
I wrote it down. It's going to be something I'm using.
That is a deal. Lock that in, guys.
Written by Body Nodge via Germany or Portugal.
No, I'm actually forward. Happy to write that story. We'll talk off air.
You guys can do my forward, please.
Sammy, wish you a huge congratulations tomorrow night for you and the girls. What a great season it's been. What a superstar you are. Go get them. And thank you so much.
I hope you guys enjoy it. Talk to you soon.
Body, amazing. Sammy, what an absolute, God, she just came across, what a superstar. She just came across in just such the loveliest lady. Unbelievable, really. I mean, just for our listeners, just to give you a bit of context, Body said to me, you know, let's get Sammy. And he went up and he got Sammy. And I said, oh, that'd be great. He said, Brad, what a story. And I knew like she was a fantastic player. I had no idea of the story that we just listened to. Like I knew it was good. I didn't realize it was amazing. Like that was just unbelievable, Body.
Yeah, she's just got a life full of sliding door moments, hasn't she? Yeah, where if you go this way, none of that happens. Or you go that way, certain things don't happen. But, yeah, the thing that I get from it, though, is that she backed herself. The whole time,
she
backed herself and believed in herself. And that, you know, I know I was mucking around during the interview saying this is the pathway, the blueprint to become Australian captain. It isn't, obviously. But what you should take from that is, if you have a dream and you believe in it and you persist and you believe in it, that's key words, you'll get there. You will get there. You will achieve it. Just work at it and you'll achieve it.
Love that story. Amazing. Anyway.
Now, let's talk NBL because there's a few clubs that aren't achieving much at all.
Okay. Like South East Melbourne. Yep. Who's the biggest failure for the season this year right now for you? When I say that to you, what's the first thing that comes to your mind?
Right now, it's definitely the Phoenix because I think most of us had Melbourne, Perth and Phoenix.
I have never had him in there because I was worried this is what would happen, but I'm not trying to say I told you so, but I do want to get back to you because you kept giving it to me about Mitch McCarron last year. But anyway.
I think, look, up until now I would have said Brisbane because I think there was high hopes for Brisbane. I didn't have any great aspirations for Adelaide. I didn't think they were going to be very good. I thought New Zealand might be, but their circumstances have to always be taken into account. So when you go, all right, Cairns is where it's at. Tasmania has absolutely, you can't say they've overachieved because, I mean, they've overachieved in what we thought, but what they have done is just played to their strengths, been a really, really good unified team, played that way and are getting the results that are appropriate to that. They're just going to narrowly miss out on the playoffs, which is an extraordinary and wonderful achievement. But if you're saying now, who's been a disappointment? Well, early days, Sydney were up and down. Early days, Illawarra had its moments where we thought, oh, maybe not. But Southeast Melbourne, it's like the bottom has fallen out of them, you know, it's sad. It's very sad.
No, so do you re-sign Simon Mitchell? He's out of contract. I read somewhere that they might be doing a multi-year deal. Do you sign Simon Mitchell if you're the GM?
Are you then identifying as Simon being the problem? Or because I look at some of those players and I think, I don't know how much say he had in signing some of the guys they've got, probably a fair say, I would think, but there are guys there that don't perform on a consistent basis. Mm. I don't know why you're re-signing Ruben Tarangi to a couple of years when he's a guy that shows up week in and then week out. Like he's not there this week, but he is next week, but then he isn't. And Cam Glidden's the same, always been the same. Not since his early days in Cairns when he was really rolling has he been a consistent player. So a lot of the people in that roster don't perform on a weekly basis. So do we lay that at the feet of the coach?
Well, it's the program, isn't it? I know what you're saying. But look, would I sign, like my question was, would you sign Simon Mitchell? Would I? Yeah, I probably would, unless a Brian Gorshin came available. Do you know what I mean? Like who really is better? That's
Rob Beveridge is out there.
Yeah. Look, you're right. It's a hard one. You know, Joey Wright's out there.
Yeah. It's not like you can't find alternatives. So if the club is sticking with Simon, then they know something that we don't.
Yeah, okay? Good point.
In our dealings with Simon, we've had him on the program.
I love him. Terrific
bloke. Yeah. But I think the sort of guys they've signed are ones that will come through for you here and there and let you down here and there.
Well, I think the biggest difference this year to last year, in my opinion, is the point guard, right? They had Sykes last year that's now in the NBL, right? Sorry, NBA. And with Sykes, they were great. And then Liatha and, you know, these guys could come off the bench and do what they're going to do. It just seems like they got 3 point guards this year. You know, all trying to do that same thing, you know. So they're all can score at times, but it hasn't been consistent every week in and week out said. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think they're the disappointment. Okay, give me your nudge nasty.
Oh, well, look, this one's about John Brown and the whole situation in Perth relating to John Brown. Now Perth is obviously, you've got to play 7 games to be eligible in a 28-game season. You've got to play 25% of the games. So they had him in town with plenty of time to replace Michael Frazier. Basically, they stuffed up the paperwork. I know the people are saying, well, you know, it took a long time and he was coming from Russia and blah, blah, blah. The reality is they could have released Michael Frazier earlier. They could have tried for someone like John Brown, you know, Mooney, somebody else. I don't know. They could have done that a lot earlier. I don't really have great sympathy for them. The NBL knocking it back, I agree with that. But what I don't like is the inconsistency of that. I mean, I agree. They knew that he had to play 7 games. They didn't get it done. Too bad. There are no extenuating circumstances yet. A couple of years ago when Melbourne United was winning a championship, Casey Prather's out injured. They're bringing a guy in. He's in. He's out. He's sitting there watching their games. It just seems to me that there's not always consistency. You know, we don't go with precedents. And that's a bit of an issue. Once you set a precedent, you've got to refer to that, and the NBL has. So while I think this decision is correct, I think the previous one was wrong. And I think just the way they fudged the rules, Brad. You remember the Next Star rule when that started? That was a kid that would have 1 year instead of going to college and was going to be drafted into the NBA, could have 1 year here. Now we've got guys that come here for Didi Lazada, a year, 2 years, Mojave King. The next Star's thing has become a little bit murky. A lot of these rules, they start off with good intent and then they end up somewhere.
Yeah, look, I hear what you're saying. Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I mean, I know you said that you agree with the rule. I 100% agree with what the NBL does. The rules state that the player has to play at least 25% games. Yep. I know that Perth had passed 75% of their games when they played Sydney 2 weeks ago or whenever it was, right? Yep. So to me, it's just black and white. No, that's it. That's just how
that's
it is.
Just, I agree. It should be. That's what I'm saying. It should be black and white, and we should be content with that decision. But it becomes grey when different decisions are made back. You know, once a precedent is set, you've got to follow that precedent or don't set it. Well, and, you know, like I just don't like the fact that the NBL has rules that aren't hard and fast. Enough with that. Give me your Rosen Rattler. I want to have a bit of a
rattle. I'm staying in Perth. Yeah, I'm staying in Perth. I'm now, for the first time in 150,000 years, questioning the Wildcats program. Now, when I say questioning, I'm shocked. I am a huge fan of what the Wildcats done. That Wildcats ball, right? I love it. I think they've been phenomenal. But I'm questioning now at the moment. I'm looking, there's a new ownership, new coaches, everything that's going through this league at the moment. I don't think that John Brown thing went down well. And when you look at, you know, Frazier, is he the right guy? Oh, yeah, I'd replace him too. I don't think that's wrong. But the fact that it didn't come up, what does that do for the team? They lost three home games for the first time since 1999, buddy. Mm. That doesn't happen to this program. Mm. Bryce Cotton looks like he is out of gas. He took 15 shots on Thursday night. We're recording this on Friday. So he took 15 shots last night for 15 points. That is not Bryce Cotton. You look at him, his body language is tight. He's still a champion. He will still come through. But I'm just sort of saying to myself, this team just doesn't look as happy or that Wildcats basketball. Damian Martin's moved on. Shaun Rennie just moved on. You know, all these guys, they've still got Jesse, but he's the last one left. This is a big time for that program now. What way is it going to go? Huge problems there for Matt Morrison. You know, he's come in after the GOAT in Perth of Trevor Gleeson. I mean, that'd be the hardest job to take.
Sure.
I feel so sorry for that bloke. But, geez, they've got some hard times coming up and it's not over yet.
I got two words for you.
Yep.
Mitch Norton.
Yeah, okay.
That's all I'm going to say. That's all I'm going to say.
You put You know, I'm a huge fan of Kyle Zuni, right? And I think he can help that program. I think he need to be. He's a development player, but I think he shouldn't be. I think he should be playing more. They just don't have.
Are you leading with your heart there? Because he's been given some chances, Brad. It's not like he's never on the floor and he's not making the open shot. You got to make the open shot.
But you know what? He's given him, buddy. You know what he's given him that no one else is? The energy on the defensive end.
Right. Right.
That's where Mitch Norton comes in, and I'll agree with it. I agree with you.
Who beat him in the Melbourne game? Shay Ely did. What does Shay Ely do? He's Mitch Norton.
Yes.
You know, so I think if you put that, you're able to put that component back in time, then I don't think it'll be as huge a problem as it looks right now.
Good call.
But that's just.
Let me ask you this, though. Do Melbourne have the best team to beat Perth when you've got Ely, Dellavedova? Just like chasing these guys around, mate. Is that the best defensive backcourt you can imagine? Like, I mean, that is unbelievable on Bryce Cotton.
So you haven't seen Dusty Hannes and Hyrum Harris?
And on that note, it is time for us to say goodbye. I want to thank Burger Boss, our beautiful sponsors. Love a good Burger Boss. To Piranha Media, thank you for having us. We love being involved. To everyone, loving the feedback that we're getting. Please send it on through. We are getting some fabulous stuff. Boddy, what a great week. Please check out Boddy. He's got some great blogs on his website, BOTINAGY.com. The best writer Australia has ever seen, Boddy.
Oh my god. This is Scott Morrison trying to follow Trevor Gleeson. How do I follow that kind of remark from Brad Rosen? Other than to say ciao for now. Talk to you next week.
See you next week, everyone. Boddy. Yeah. Can I just say what a great story that was about Sammy? I just still can't believe that. I'm gobsmacked.
Yeah, look, can you leave me alone at the moment? I'm making notes for my new book, Fish and Chips to the Olympics.